This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Bob Edwards. Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld, for the first time, has suggested the United States might go to war against Iraq even without the help of Britain, its closest ally. Rumsfeld said yesterday that Britain's role in a possible war may not be known until negotiations over a new United Nations resolution are resolved. A separate question is whether Britain and other countries would assist the United States in Iraq after a war there. Pentagon officials yesterday laid out their blueprint for managing Iraq in a post-war period. NPR's Tom Jeldom reports the plan is ambitious and costly.
The U.S. military is taking post-war planning seriously, in part because 12 years ago they learned what happens when you're unprepared. The 1991 Gulf War ended more quickly than U.S. commanders thought it would. American military units found themselves occupying territory they had not expected to occupy, with responsibilities they were not ready to handle. An NPR report in March 1991 profiled Army Lieutenant Daryl Hudson inside Iraq in the awkward position of not being able to help the Iraqi people his unit had just liberated.
The mission of the military up here right now is just, of course, until all the peace accords are finalized, to just have a presence up here. We're even kind of limited as far as what we can do for the civilian population. There's not a lot of us giving them food and water on a large scale basis.
Lieutenant Hudson's commanding officer back then was Major General Thomas Rame, who led the Army's 1st Infantry Division. The International Red Cross was telling Rame his units were the occupying power in Iraq at that moment, and that under the international laws of war, occupying armies are responsible for the civilian population under their control. But in March 1991, Rame told NPR he was not authorized to take responsibility for feeding the local people.
We are an army which are holding the ground, subject to our president, our State Department, negotiating a formal ceasefire. I am under no instructions as to being an occupying army yet. One could argue that case. I'm not under those instructions.
General Rame, now retired, recalls that his superior officers back then had not realized the U.S. military would end up occupying portions of Iraq and had made no preparations to feed Iraqis who would fall under their control. The U.S. Army units were overstretched, Rame recalls, and barely able to take care of their own needs.
Food, I think, was an issue because, number one, I don't think anyone envisioned doing it, and number two, where we were at that specific time, I think there was about enough rations and water to sustain the four deployed force, and it was only within the next 2 weeks that food became available that you would have to distribute to someone other than the combatant units.
General Rame, now an NPR military analyst, says the U.S. Armed Forces should be approaching a second Gulf War with the recognition they would have to take care of any Iraqi civilians they encounter as they march on Baghdad.
The lesson learned is you better be prepared to handle that now with the attacking and the follow-on forces, because non-combatants are going to be a necessary part of whatever the attacking forces undertake.
A Pentagon team, in fact, has spent the past 2 months working out a plan for how U.S. forces would handle the responsibilities they would face in Iraq. And yet critics still wonder if the U.S. military is prepared. This time around, the war aim would be to change the Iraqi regime. With victory, U.S. commanders would find themselves responsible for all Iraq, not just one small corner, as in 1991. U.S. authorities in Iraq would have to take over the entire Iraqi state, assuming responsibility for water and electricity, health care, food distribution, and especially law and order. Retired Major General William Nash commanded a U.S. Army brigade in Iraq in 1991 and later an Army division in Bosnia. Now a senior fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations, Nash says military commanders should not begin combat operations before figuring out what they'll do afterwards.
Fortunately, wars end, and the process by which they end and the transition from war to an absence of war to peace has to be addressed in a systematic manner, and as you begin the combat, you need to be sure that you have looked all the way through the endeavor.
Franklin Roosevelt and Winston Churchill, Nash says, were discussing their plans for post-war Europe 2 or 3 years before the end of World War II. At the Pentagon yesterday, defense officials for the first time laid out their ideas for managing Iraq in the aftermath of war. The United States, they said, will need to establish a new Iraqi government. U.S. authorities will need to see that schools and hospitals stay open, that courts continue to function, and that damaged institutions are rebuilt. So far, the Bush administration has not explained exactly how these goals will be met or what it would cost. The Senate Foreign Relations Committee heard testimony on these questions yesterday. Eric Schwartz, who served on President Clinton's National Security Council, said the Bush administration should talk not only about the dangers of Saddam Hussein's Iraq, but also about the challenges Iraq and the United States will face after Saddam.
It is critically important that the president step up his efforts to explain to the American people the rationale for U.S. engagement in post-war Iraq. And it's also essential that he begin to describe the magnitude of the American post-conflict commitment.
In a background briefing yesterday, defense officials who would be involved in an Iraq reconstruction effort said U.S. authorities will initially take over the leadership of some government ministries, but the plan is to leave much of the ministry workforces intact in order to ensure that essential government services are not interrupted. Local Iraqi police departments are likely to continue in operation. The defense officials said a good portion of the regular Iraqi army will even be kept together and put to work rebuilding damaged bridges, removing rubble, picking up unexploded ordnance, and undertaking other reconstruction tasks. For a while, the U.S. government is likely to be the paymaster, covering the salaries of as many as 2 million government employees. Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld says when and if U.S. forces take over Iraq, they'll find many competent Iraqis in key government positions.
A judgment will have to be made at some point as to what portions of those people ought to be kept in place. And the way to keep them in place, rather than having them all suddenly be without their government stipend, would be to find some way to see that they are given enough to live while they're staying in place and performing what would have to be characterized as a useful service.
Not since World War II would the United States be taking on such a financial and political responsibility in another country. And yet, even with the United States on the verge of this new Iraq war, the Bush administration has had little to say about its post-war plan. Republican Senator Richard Lugar of Indiana, chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, expected to hear yesterday from the administrator of the U.S. Agency for International Development, Andrew Natsios, as well as Jay Garner, the retired Army general who's been picked to administer Iraq in the immediate post-war period. At the last minute, the administration chose not to let the men testify, to Lugar's great frustration.
This, in my judgment, is a missed opportunity for the administration to communicate its views on Iraq reconstruction, not only to senators who want to help in meeting potentially complex and expensive requirements, but also to the American people whose long-term support of these efforts will be a necessity.
The administration not only refuses to put a price tag on its post-war plan for Iraq, it won't even say how much international support it will seek. A Pentagon official involved in the post-war planning for Iraq says the United States still hopes the United Nations will share the burden, but a senior UN official says he has not yet seen any U.S. request for UN help. Tom Gelton, NPR News, Washington.
Tom reflects on the similarities between the current Iraqi crisis and the 1991 war with Iraq in an essay at npr.org.